youth activists, and climate change. It is a growing worldwide movement with a big contingent in Maine. Young people, many not even old enough to vote, mobilizing to combat climate change. Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg is credited with sparking the movement. She began with sit-ins at the Swedish Parliament and has since addressed global leaders and has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Maine students are picking up the charge. Hundreds took part in a climate strike last month, and tomorrow we'll hold a Youth Day of Action in Augusta. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, marking Earth Day, we will meet some of the leaders of the Maine Youth Climate Change Movement. Learn what motivates them and what they think they can accomplish. This show is part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics relating to climate change. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. All over the world, young people are speaking out for more action on climate change. Here in Maine, a new generation of activists is leading the charge. Today, Earth Day, we are going to talk with some of these students about what's driving their activism and what they hope to achieve. Joining me in the studio, Iris Fenn Gillingham is a freshman at the College of the Atlantic and has been featured in a National Geographic documentary, spoken at rallies, and written about climate and environmental justice. She is a founding member of the organization Zero Hour. Anna Siegel is a seventh grader at Friends School, a member of 350 Maine, and an organizer of local climate justice rallies, including one tomorrow in Augusta. And Anya Wright is a junior at the College of the Atlantic. She has led climate protests, traveled to Poland as a delegate to the UN Climate Summit, and is an environmental leader at her school, as well as the new Maine Youth for Climate Justice group. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you think young people are capable of making a difference? What questions or concerns about climate change do you have? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. I think it might be our youngest panel ever on Maine Calling. Iris, give us a sense of what's happening worldwide in terms of young people stepping forward to address climate change. It's really the last year that things have really picked up steam, isn't it?
Yeah, I think young people are really seeing that in many cases our elected officials are not listening to what we want. And this is the first year that I could actually vote. So when I started taking action, I couldn't even vote yet. And I was wanting our elected officials to adapt policies that were going to make sure that I had a livable future. And I believe that this is something that has just grown because we as young people are deciding we're going to step up and take courage, and we will become our own leaders if our leaders are not actually doing what they need to do in order to provide us with a sustainable and livable future for our lives and future generations.
Anya, we mentioned that you were in Poland for the UN Climate Summit there. Tell me what that was like and what you did there.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. I was there as a part of a delegation from College of the Atlantic. And while I was there, I worked with the young climate activist Greta Thunberg, and that's sort of how I got involved with these youth strikes and climate activism run by youth. And since I've gotten back from Poland, I've been involved in Maine organizing for the youth strikes happening here, and really recognizing what a voice that youth can have and what power we bring to this issue.
Greta Thunberg, 16 years old from Sweden, credited with really sparking this movement, has spoken before the UN, the EU, has been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. What did you do with Greta while you were there?
Yeah, I was helping her with some of her media appointments and working with her to write some of her speeches, and really just getting to know her and getting to know her message and why she's doing what she's doing. It was a very inspiring and powerful experience.
Were there many young people from different countries there?
Yeah, there were young people from all over the world and people from all over the world, young and old. We were part of a civil society delegation, so working with a lot of people, not in negotiations themselves, but working for bringing climate justice to the forefront of these negotiations and fighting for justice around the world. So,
Anna, you're the youngest one on our panel today. You've been very active here in Maine on climate change issues. Why have you stepped up to take action? What was your spark?
Well, I'm deeply passionate about wildlife. And when I was younger, I always felt a sense of urgency. And often it would scare me, and I didn't know what to do. And I thought that the only way that I could speak up or take action was just to do the best I could in school and then become a scientist, and then people would take me seriously. And one day in one of these meetings that we had been having at lunch at school, just kids talking about climate change, nothing was really going on, I spontaneously raised my hand to speak at City Hall for a petition send-off that we were filing to the DEP. And that just started everything. I read this poem about climate change and birds that I had written, and then more and more opportunities just came up. And all of a sudden, then I was the main state lead for the March 15th Global Climate Strikes, a representative of U.S. Youth Climate Strikes. That was crazy. And now I'm here.
And you are how old?
I'm 12 years old.
Tell us about what's happening tomorrow, the Augusta protest.
So tomorrow is the day of action. And in the morning, from 11 to 12:45, there is going to be 11:30 to 12:45. There is going to be a rally on the steps of the State House. And in the afternoon, we are going to be meeting with legislators and key political leaders. And it is a chance for youth to speak up and show that they do have power within our government and to use their voice to make a change.
Some of you have already testified before the legislature, correct? You have, Anna, right?
I testified before the DEP.
Okay.
And I've spoken with Hannah Pingree.
Okay. And you as well, Iris?
No, not this legislature, but I have testified many times in my home state of New York and against fracking and other issues where I live.
How are you all received by adults? What do they say to you when you approach them? Do they take you seriously?
I feel like I have experienced a lot of ageism being a youth activist, where I am given a pat on the head or a pat on the shoulder, being like, this is so amazing that you're here representing the youth. But then when I actually bring forward actual suggestions and being like, we really do need a just transition, they're like, yeah, yeah, but it's bigger than that. Like, we have these other things we also have to take care of. So I think being taken seriously as a young person when you're just trying to fight for the basic rights that you want to live, which is clean water, clean air, a livable planet. And it can be really scary and just make you feel put down. But I think young people are really not letting ourselves be let down by the pressure to step back that adults are giving us. And we are really taking to the streets. We're striking. We're taking action.
Anya, when you were in Poland, what was the experience of the young people there? How did the legislators, the leaders, adult leaders from around the world treat you?
Well, I think youth activism has really taken off since I came back from Poland. And I think the power of the youth voice is that we are the power of the future and that we're calling for action so that future generations will have a livable future and something to look forward to. And so that's a very powerful message that gets picked up a lot. And I've had conversations with people who have been working on climate legislation for years, thanking the youth for speaking up and calling to attention that we need to do this for our future generations and that this isn't just about now.
Have you had people say, you all, you know, you mean well, but you're really naive?
Absolutely.
You're all nodding.
When I was the partnerships director for Zero Hour and I was managing all of our partnerships, I was only 17 at the time, and I would send emails talking to people, and they would reply, great, we would love to partner with you. Put us in touch with the adult mentor. And that was really hard because I was actually doing the work.
Joining us on the line now, Representative Chloe Maxman. She is the Maine State Representative for District 88. Representative Maxman, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for letting me call in.
I understand that you got your start as a young environmental activist like our panelists today. Tell us why and how you got involved in the beginning.
Well, I got involved for some of the reasons that these young folks are saying, which is that I really love Maine. I love the community that I grew up in. I love my home. And I think that the greatest threat to Maine, our way of life, our culture, everything that we love here, the greatest threat is climate change. So we have to do something about it.
Did your environmental activism relate directly to your decision to run for office?
Absolutely. I've been doing climate work mostly in Maine since I was 12. And for my whole life, I have been trying to get our political system to stand up and do something on climate, to fight for our generation and all generations to come. But throughout the years, I have seen the climate crisis worsen, and the political power seems to get stronger and stronger on the outside, but the proposals on the inside don't seem to match the urgency of the crisis. So in my mind, what we need is strong elected officials at all levels, all across the country, to stand up and propose bold climate policy. And also we need these really powerful movements on the ground that are calling on our political system and holding our elected officials accountable.
Representative Maxman, do you think that the efforts of the young people today have a chance of really making a difference?
I absolutely do. And I think they already have. One of the greatest gifts in my life has been working with so many youth on the climate issue. And I've seen just such a moral clarity and a moral bravery that I really haven't seen replicated anywhere else in my work. And what I think is really amazing is that all of these young folks are standing up and saying, we need to take action right now. And we know that's right. We know that's the right thing to do. Even when all of the people in our world who we're supposed to look to for leadership, our president, our elected officials, the people who run our universities, even when they tell us that we're naive or this can't be done, we don't let that influence us. We still have the vision and the fierce commitment to keep going because we know that's what we have to do.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. That's Chloe Maxman. She is Maine State Representative for District 88. Thank you for calling in. You mentioned, Anna, that your biggest motivation or what started you was your love for wildlife. What about you, Iris? What was your original gut feeling? What's most important to you?
I actually experienced the drastic weather changing for the first time on my family's farm. In the span of 5 years, we had 2 100-year floods and 1 500-year flood. And the 500-year flood forced my family to stop growing organic vegetables for a living. So that was my first experience with how severe Mother Nature can be and the erratic weather patterns. And then not long after that, we had people coming in wanting to frack the land. And I was named after, my name is Iris, and so I was named after a beautiful plant. And my middle name is Fen, which is the place where it grows. So for me, my connection to the natural world has always been very strong. And I just feel like it's so important for us to recognize that we are put on this earth and we cannot just keep it taking from it. There has to be a reciprocal relationship with the natural world as we're living here.
Anya, what about you?
I guess I've been interested in solving climate change my whole life, but I think what got me really interested in devoting my studies and my time to it was being in school and learning about the intersections between social justice issues and climate change and where those intersections mm-hmm. happen and how solving the climate crisis can be more about just solving an environmental problem, but also about solving social problems and economic problems.
So tell me what you mean by that.
Feel free to jump in. So part of that is supporting, like what Representative Maxim was talking about, supporting bold climate policy and legislation that, like the Green New Deal and the Green New Deal for Maine, that supports renewable energy and industry while also supporting a just transition and creating jobs for marginalized communities?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think is really important about climate change is that it is an intersectional issue. And we must always be looking at the different pieces that play into that, because the impacts of climate change are hitting marginalized communities, communities of color, low-income communities drastically. And I think it's really important to recognize some of the root causes. And so Zero Hour just released a campaign that we're working on, Zero Hour is the organization I work with, and we call it Get to the Roots of Climate Change. And we are looking at addressing the root causes, which are colonization and racism and patriarchy and capitalism. And these are some pieces in society that really play into this issue and crisis of climate change.
When you say climate change affects marginalized communities, and what do you mean? Give us some examples of what you mean by a marginalized community and how climate change affects them.
Yeah, I mean, if we look around the world, we see that many of the communities that are being the most impacted are not the communities that are responsible for this crisis. A lot of times it's corporations and people who have this money and privilege that are making the decisions, and they're choosing to pollute and to destroy. And the seas are rising in different communities where their voice is not at the table. So I think it's very important for us to recognize that we need to be putting the people who are feeling the biggest impacts of climate change at the table that is making the decisions for our future.
So you're talking about places where are facing sea level rise.
Sea level rise, fossil fuel extraction, all of the things that contribute to climate change, as well as the impacts of climate change, such as Puerto Rico and the hurricanes. You know, this issue is also about climate change is a social justice issue, first and foremost.
And that's really important for people to understand, because sometimes the reaction I get from other kids and adults is the idea of people, you know, going vegan and chaining themselves to trees so they don't get cut down, and that kind of stereotype of an environmentalist. But it's beyond pure environmentalism. It connects to climate justice. Is the term that's really important here, climate change and climate justice. So that's why I think that what Iris and Anya are saying is really important, because people have this idea of what environmentalism is. And
it sounds to me like your generation feels a little different than the tree huggers of my generation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Iris bringing up Puerto Rico is a great example of Hurricane Maria. Took 3,000 lives in Puerto Rico, which is the same amount of lives taken in 9/11. And there was a huge response to 9/11, but there wasn't the same response to Puerto Rico. And I think a question that we ask a lot within the realm of climate justice is, where's the justice and the response for people in Puerto Rico or other places like the flooding in the Midwest happening right now? Where is the justice for those people that are being so heavily affected by this issue that we're not recognizing the urgency for?
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Earth Day. We're talking about youth climate activism on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Nome Landscapes, dedicated to enhancing outdoor living in Maine with installation, design, masonry, and maintenance. NomeLandscapes.com. And Fresh Eggs Daily, dedicated to backyard chickens and publisher of 101 Chicken Keeping Hacks, FreshEggsDaily.com.
Google and its sister companies are working hard to move artificial intelligence out of our smartphones and web browsers and into the world of medicine.
Patients are already seeing this intersection between technology and healthcare. It's just we're hitting an inflection point.
What will happen when one of the world's biggest companies steps into this personal space? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. Celebrate spring this year at Maine Spring Live, Wildlife, Science, and You. Join Maine Public and Maine Audubon on Saturday, April 27th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Gilsland Farm Sanctuary in Falmouth for this outdoor family festival. It's a chance to learn about citizen science, watch wild animal demonstrations, join guided bird walks, or learn about solar energy at Audubon's large solar array, and more.
folks attending can connect with dozens of nature and science-focused organizations. It's a family-oriented event, and there will be food trucks on location as well. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on events for details.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, a global youth movement for climate justice. Joining me here, three young climate change activists based here in Maine. Anna Siegel is a seventh grader at Friends School and an organizer of local climate justice rallies. On your right, from the College of Atlantic, has led climate protests, traveled to Poland for the UN Climate Summit, and is with the new Maine Youth for Climate Justice Group. And Iris Fenn Gillingham is from the College of Atlantic as well. She has been featured in a National Geographic documentary, spoken at rallies, writes about environmental justice. She is with the organization Zero Hour. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Calling in now, Marston Shetterly. He is 10 years old, attends the Friends School. Thanks for calling in, Marston.
Thank you.
I hear you've gotten involved with climate change activism. What are some ways that you've gotten involved?
Well, I went to the Portland Youth Rally in March, and I was in a video my parents made about kids and their feelings about climate change.
Okay. What is fighting for climate change action? Why does it matter to you?
It matters to me because I want to save the sequoia trees out west. The sequoia forests are thinning because of climate change, and this hurts me because I visited them last fall, and they made me feel really tiny. They are my favorite trees, and I really want to save them. I also am worried about all plant and animal endangered species.
All right. So in what ways do you think kids your age can make a difference?
We can show selfish grown-ups that we care about our future.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Marston. Marston Shetterly, a 10-year-old student at Friends School. We're going to go now to Kaylee Kimball. She's a senior at Husson University, president of her school's climate justice group, and a representative to Husson's sustainability committee. Thanks for calling in, Kaylee.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
What mobilized you to get involved?
Well, I've always had a really special connection with Earth, and I never really knew where to put that. And coming to Husson University, I really found my voice. I think that as citizens of this Earth, it's all of our duty to clean up this mess that it took all of us to create.
So you're a senior. What do you plan to do in this area after you graduate from Husson?
Great question. So I am going to continue working for the USDA. I survey for invasive insects around the state. And as climate change increases, this is more of a problem. So I'm really excited to try and make a difference there.
All right. Well, Kaylee, thanks so much for calling in. That's Kaylee Kimball, a senior at Husson University. We are going to go to Jay, who's calling from Old Town. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer, and hi, panel. Three panelists, three questions. First, climate is change. It's tautological. It's defined by change. So let's just acknowledge that it's been changing. But at the same time, we've got millions of tons of carbon that we're pumping into the atmosphere, demonstrated that we've got glaciers melting and seas rising. So certainly acknowledge that point. Secondly, so if somebody can address that notion. Secondly, China and India are not going to be persuaded. They're going to take advantage of the fact that we are throttling our economies with excessive regulation on energy, and just at a time where we're actually becoming energy independent. And thirdly, this notion of the word naive, I don't think it quite captures it. I have been responsible for others. I have met payrolls. I've started a business. The fact that we should just, line up behind our youth, because, of course, our youth is our future. I'm curious to know, I'm sure they're very studious in understanding the perils to our climate. But at the same time, I'm curious to know why is it that we should just accept the informed opinions of our youth when they don't have any true life experience?
Hi, I'm Iris. So I think one thing is that we're not saying to just listen to us and run with it per se. We are just hoping that we can work intergenerationally with all of the experiences that folks have based off of. I know you have a very different experience than I do, and I think it's really important for us to work with that as young people and know that we are a new generation and we have new ideas, but that we need to really be thinking about having courage for taking action around what the future is going to hold, whatever that is.
And although this movement is largely fueled by youth, anyone can have a part. You know, anyone can do something.
I want to ask you, Anya, something that Jade talked about since you've been involved internationally, his point that he doesn't believe China and India will step up to the plate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't totally know how to answer that question.
Oh, okay. So you didn't see, did you see China and India in the organizations that you have been in the, when you've been traveling, when you traveled to Poland, were there young people there from China and India? Did you speak with delegates from those countries or not?
There are definitely youth activists from China and India. But in terms of the Chinese and Indian governments, there's definitely pushback against climate legislation, especially because they're developing nations and they want to be able to use the fossil fuel energy.
So that is a challenge.
Yeah,
go ahead, Iris.
I think for some places, it's really hard to say that we should not be involved in trying to create a new future, because America and the United States, like, we have been such a contributor to climate change and the effects that we're feeling right now, that it's very important for us to understand that people in India, they're just trying to get access to clean water right now, and that part of that is due to many of the ways that we have colonized and exploited other countries. And so many of what we call developing countries, they are that way due to the advancement of and the privileges that we get to feel here in the United States.
Jay, thanks for your call. We have an email from Jolene. I believe that the only way to save the planet is for young people to step up. Usually, young people believe that bad things will not happen to them, while older people are more cautious. In this case, that is flipped. Many older people selfishly figure this won't affect them, as the remainder of their life is short. We can't depend on many older people. All young people need to know is that this is happening to them. I thank your panel in advance for undertaking this huge task. We're going to move on to Denali, calling from Falmouth. Hi, Denali. Go ahead.
Hi. I want to thank you guys for the panel today. I'm a recent Bates grad and a friend, and I have just started a climate change newsletter in order to uplift the perspectives and voices that Iris and the other panelists were talking about from marginalized communities. I do want to mention that I happen to be a Mainer from India, and I know a lot about farm work in India to do with the drought. And there is so much ground work on the ground level that's really revolutionary that's being done in India. Maybe it's not on a government scale, but I think that ties into my question for the panel, which is to do with what I perceive as the importance of documenting and storytelling in this movement, and a global documentation and storytelling, because for a lot of countries around the globe, climate change isn't something in the future, it's something very much in the present. And so I wonder if the panel could talk a little bit about the importance of telling stories and listening to people all around the world as part of this youth movement and broader movement against climate change.
Go ahead, Anna.
Yeah, so telling stories is huge, and recently I watched the most amazing movie related to climate change called The Human Element, and it was connected to the four different elements of the earth, fire, water, earth, and air, and it talked about how people around the world are affected by those four things changing. And that really sparked the idea for me about journalism and photography in the use of the climate movement, and I think that is massively important. For the March 15th climate strikes, there were photos from all around the world, and there were incredible slideshows. And I know so many people who I showed them to that said, wow, that's inspiring. I want to attend one of those strikes. I want to be part of that. And more than just telling the stories of people, it also brings more people into those stories.
Iris.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that is really important about this right now is for so long we have been just looking at the science, and the science is vitally important to looking at how we can shape our future. But we also must be looking at the people that right now are being impacted. And I think what you brought up about stories is so important because we need to be learning about how people are being impacted. I was able to go to Houston, Texas, right before Hurricane Harvey, and the community that I visited was this community already entirely impacted by fossil fuel infrastructure. So when Hurricane Harvey hit, the first thing that like plunged my heart was that they had already been feeling the effects of fossil fuel extraction. They then felt this effect of hurricanes, and that community was a community majority of color, and they, like, their story needs to be told. I think the emotion that comes with a mother who is worried about bathing her daughter in her own water because of contamination, that is where it's really important to look at the stories, because that can be very powerful and motivating. And I know for me, that's incredible.
Anya.
Yeah, and I think even looking right in the state of Maine, I had a great conversation with a lobsterman a few months ago, and he was talking about how his family has been lobstering for generations and how he's been noticing within his own generation changes in the ocean due to ocean acidification and the migration of the lobster up the state, up the coast. And just recognizing those stories as important within how we talk about these things.
Denali, thanks for your call. We'll move up to Belfast and Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
excuse me. I just wanted to say how proud I am of all the girls on the panel and our young ladies, I'm sorry, and all of the younger generation. If they keep stepping up and voting for progressives like AOC and Bernie, and they can get the future to look the way that we need it to look. I'm super proud to hear how good everybody's doing. And when I was 16 and 18 and 20 years old, I did not care anything about anything like this. So it gives me hope for the future.
Kevin, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from David. I don't know if the activism by young people now is the answer, and I don't claim to know what the answer is, but I'm a 60-year-old parent of a 14-year-old, and I certainly think about what his future will be on this planet. I remember in the late 60s living in Caribou and traveling to Kennebunk. And every time we crossed rivers, over bridges, rolling up the windows because of the stink coming from the rivers. I remember the rivers being foamy and full of trash. Then the Clean Water Act was passed and all the negative comments on the news at the time about it being waste of time and money. But now look at the results because of it. I just wish that the current people in power could realize that they won't be here forever and to listen to the young people and understand why they feel scared, and to show them enough respect to at least listen to what they have to say. They may not have all the answers, but to disregard them is a shame.
That is a really important point, because something that we've been seeing is that administrations are not looking past their own term. A four-year administration will only look at those 4 years. They'll look at the legislation that they'll pass in those 4 years. But the youth were looking decades and decades and decades and decades ahead. And this is almost the exact same thing that I said in an article that I was quoted in recently, just because it's really important. It's something that I keep saying, that we're looking farther than our political leaders are.
We'll go to, let's see, Bill, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, I also want to reiterate, like, not only how proud I am of this panel, but also, like, what breadth of knowledge they have globally of the issue. I was curious when I lose people on the climate part of this argument, I sometimes turn to the economic part of it, because two obstacles I face when I try to convince people. One is it's too expensive, which I'll just put in. If you look up the average cost of a kitchen remodel, it exceeds the average cost of a solar installation. And the other obstacle I face is there's no return. Economic return, which I want to just highlight. I had a customer who spent $4 million on LEDs with us 9 years ago, and to date, they've saved nearly $30 million in electricity costs. So I was curious what the panel does to try to convince those that might not be able to be swayed from a climate perspective but there are other ways to sway those holdouts. Thank you.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always try to point out is that when we're looking at the cost that it will take to put these the infrastructure in place now versus the cost it will take when communities are being entirely washed away, when the impacts are hitting home to everyone in the world, and what that cost is going to be like, because that cost is not going to be money. That cost is going to be lives. And that's a very different, that those should not be compared in my mind. I think lives are something that we should be putting first and foremost.
Bill, thanks for your call. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
In 2017, U.S. Navy destroyers collided with large commercial ships in two separate incidents in the South China Sea, killing 17 American sailors. On the next Fresh Air, we speak with ProPublica's T. Christian Miller, part of an investigative team that found chronic understaffing and other problems affecting ships in the 7th Fleet, which responds to threats from China, North Korea, and Russia. Join us.
And join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. And at 2 o'clock, join us for World Affairs. We'll hear a discussion about the increasingly important global role social media is playing in politics. Not only does it determine our political discussions, but transform the way politicians communicate with both the public and each other. 280 characters or less, leadership and governance in the age of social media. That's coming up today at 2 on World Affairs after Maine Calling.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, young people mobilizing to fight climate change. Joining us today, three young activist leaders from Maine. On your right, Iris Fenn Gillingham and Anna Siegel. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Anna, you organized the March 15th rally in Portland. Tell me what that was all about. This wasn't just kids playing hooky from school, right?
Yeah, that was something I had to tell many people over and over again, because that I've heard that before a lot. So that was a global climate strike day, and it's estimated that 1.4 million youth went on strike on that day around the world, involving around 112 countries. The number has been changing because it just keeps going up. And so that International Strike for Climate Day was declared by Greta Thunberg, who sparked the Fridays for the Future movement. And since the March 15th climate strike, there was a strike in Portland, one in Bar Harbor, one in Bates, and then smaller ones around the state. And since then, I've been leading, along with a fellow activist, Emma Sawyer, we've been leading a group of students to Portland. We've been at Monument Square. We've been striking every Friday. And it's a small group right now, but it's slowly going to get bigger, hopefully. And what's also happening as a follow-up is the April 23rd Day of Action. That's not a global day. That's something that's happening just in Maine.
Okay, so somebody who's saying, yeah, right, a 12-year-old organized that climate rally. How'd you do it? How'd you get so many young people to turn up on March 15th?
I have to say it wasn't just me. 350 Maine and all my other organizers from the state, Ania, and I had a lot of support. I met a lot of really amazing people. I gathered a lot of contacts. It was a lot of emailing. And USU's climate strike helped a lot. It's all about networking. It's all about pitching to different people why you think that they should be there. And it just takes patience and time.
But you really did the work. You're not just the front man for an adult organization that is using you, your face, and your age, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. I did have support, but I do think that I put in a lot of effort for it.
Anne on Facebook writes, I do not think there is climate change going on in the world, only the four seasons. Those in favor of believing this climate change are pushing for a one-world government. The polar caps are getting thicker, not thinner, and Al Gore knew nothing of science in his day. I think people need to recycle when it's possible and try to conserve resources, but this climate change topic is for the birds. You guys know other people like Anne who believe this is not right, real.
Yes, I think there's a lot of people that have their opinions based off of their experiences. I know from my experience, that's not what I believe. I think that there is a lot of room for education and growth. And I really hope that this person who made this comment is open to listening to the young people who are going to be here, creating change no matter what. We're stepping up.
We're going to go to Kana calling from Portland. Hi, Kana. Go ahead.
Hi. What actions could I take to fight climate change as a 10-year-old?
Hi, Kana. Thanks for calling in. One thing that you can do is join us tomorrow in Augusta at the Youth Day of Action rally. We'll be rallying for climate change action within the state of Maine and then meeting with legislators all day to talk to them about what we can do within the state of Maine to demand bold climate action.
And if you can't join us then, you could try talking to your teachers about involving climate change education into your public school's curriculum.
All right, Kana, thanks for your call. Good luck to you. We're going to go to Thaddeus, who's calling from New York City. Hi, Thaddeus. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm a middle school teacher on childcare leave with my infant daughter, also named Greta. And I'm just so inspired by these activists. You know, as a teacher, you hope that you inspire children. And it's just so nice to be inspired by the ones who are going to be, you know, as they've said several times, impacted by climate change the most. And I think you see some presidential candidates beginning to talk about that, especially the younger ones, saying they'll be here longer. You need to listen to the people who are going to experience these issues. And further, I think that goes to what the gentleman who called earlier said about people in India and China. You know, they're going to experience these issues far more than we are here. And we are a global community. I don't know about a world government, but we certainly are a global community and need to treat the globe like our community.
Thaddeus, thanks for your call. Ellen on Facebook writes, Portland Public School Kids organizing a walkathon to raise money and awareness to solarize 6 public schools in Portland. Our kids are taking action to address climate change. Anna, you involved in this?
So I've been in contact with the organizer of that. She is awesome. I believe I didn't pay as much attention to it as I would have liked because I'm going to be away that weekend, which is also unconveniently the next call for the next global strike day, May 3rd. But I think that's amazing. And, you know, I think people should definitely attend that. It's May 4th, Solarize Portland Walkathon.
We'll go to Bob, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call, Jennifer. I wanted to congratulate the young people who are speaking up, and I really have a lot of respect for each and every one of them, no matter how young they are, because the future does belong to them. I did want to counter 100% what that grumpy old businessman said about, oh, we can't do this because China and India are not. That's a bunch of hokum. They're moving full speed ahead with solar and other green energy. And we're going to be left in the dust, and people like that are going to realize too late at the expense of our children. So I want to encourage the young folks who are there with you and everybody else out there to not be discouraged when you hear from grumpy old men and women and naysayers, because change happens with people like you, not with the people who are naysayers. So keep doing what you're doing.
Bob, thanks for your call.
I think it takes a lot of courage to think of the kind of future that we could have. So, thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Larry calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
I'd like to answer a couple things. The lady who said that it's all hokum, I'm less than 100 and less than 500 as well. I've lived through 3 100-year floods on the upper Mississippi and 1 500-year flood on the upper Mississippi. we've all seen the temper tantrum, and also I've lived in Miami, and we never had any water on the road, and now the water from the ocean is flowing onto the road various times of the year. The other thing I want to mention is we've seen the temper tantrums that our president has about immigrants. India is going to have 1 billion Bangladeshis coming over their border because their land is going to be all underwater. I'm sure they're going to have their own temper tantrum, and they are doing as much as they can to relieve climate change. And I guess that's about all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Larry, for calling in. Anna?
Larry, you also brought up a really important point about climate immigration, and climate change is actually bringing migrants to the Mexican border, specifically from Guatemala. And there was a program to help Guatemalans adapt to their changing landscape, which the Trump administration cut the funding for. So that's a big paradox, that Trump's trying to keep immigrants away, but then doesn't acknowledge that climate change is bringing immigrants to the Mexican border. So that's a really important issue and directly linked to climate justice.
All right, moving on to Lika calling from Friendship. Hi, Lika, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm a retired school teacher now living in Maine. I was in Connecticut, and I was part of the original Earth Day celebrations, and my students were very involved. I was concerned when I heard on today's news that there are many teachers into our schools today who believe in climate change but are reluctant to teach about it, sometimes being fearful of reprisals from parents who may not agree. So there's that. And also maybe not being fully prepared to teach correct climate change. And I'm wondering if our panel could address where, you know, the information that they're getting both on the science and on the social issues, and how are they getting that information and being sure that it's correct.
Thanks so much for your call, Leica. That's part of what this group that we're all a part of, the Maine Youth for Climate Justice group, is thinking about moving forward from this Youth Day of Action that we're having tomorrow. We've had a lot of conversations about climate change education and where we get our resources and what we need to do to change how we're talking about climate change. And that's something that we really want to push for moving forward, is incorporating climate change education into schools and climate justice education.
Lika, thanks for your call. We'll move to Margaret calling from Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hi. Oh, I'm so excited that you're having this conversation, and I'm so excited about younger people really standing up and saying, we can't take this anymore, and we're going to insist something is done about it. I've got 15 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren, and I've been in despair about what's going on. I know that my own little piece of saving electricity, having solar arrays and electric cars, not going to change the picture, although I'll keep doing it. On the other hand, I was a little concerned about one of the students mentioning, seemed to be a little bit floored about the issue of is it fair to ask all of the nations to do something to stop climate change, and feeling that maybe we should be more tolerant, and that these poor countries want to catch up, and that's a justice issue. But there's the issue of being able to leapfrog over the kind of polluting technology that brought us all our advantages, and use some renewable energy. They don't have to string up telephone wires and have centralized.
Sure, Margaret. Yeah, and I think we've had another caller make the same point. Anna, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, so I believe that moral liability of countries to act upon climate change is based upon their own emissions. So the U.S. has been one of the largest carbon polluters in history, and historically that was China, and now it's the U.S. So I believe that the countries that are highest up on the rankings of being the largest carbon polluters have the most to do, and they have the most ethical responsibility and moral responsibility to take responsibility for their actions. So, yes, it does. I do think it depends on how that country stands, and generally it's the countries that are richer and willing to just throw coal around that have all this carbon pollution, and they're the ones who need to do the most to make up for that.
Margaret, thanks for your call. I'm going to try to squeeze in another call. I'm going to go to Kitsy in Portland. Hi, Kitsy. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm 80 years old. I love hearing these young women speak about their passion. Have been following them. I want to remind them or tell them of something they may not know. There used to be an organization called Gray Panthers, and it was Youth and Age in Action, believing that both the very young and the older have nothing to lose. Their jobs are done, they're retired, and they often have the time. And the wisdom and the energy combined from both are so important. I also wanted to say that one of the things I keep remembering, and I invite these young women to remember it too, is that in addition to being concerned about endangered species and those among us who are human who are really getting the short end of the stick, that none of us, not a single one of us listening to my voice, including me, can take our next breath without many other species on this planet. We are losing the rainforest because it's taken in so much carbon dioxide that now the carbon dioxide that they're taking in is killing them. We need to be aware, as we're working on human issues, to also remember that we and all of the species are in this together, and to raise that awareness. And I do it by reminding people of the breath.
Well, thank you, Kitsy. Thank you for your call. Have you had others say, let's work together. Let's have generations come together here. And you're nodding, Iris.
Yeah, I think it's vitally important that we work together intergenerationally with both of our expertise, the young new views that are coming into this world and the people who have lived through a lot of experiences in this country.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here today, and thank you for our callers and emailers. So many we were not able to get to because clearly such a high interest topic. And thanks to our guests, Iris Fenn Gillingham, a freshman at the College of Atlantic, an active organizer and writer for environmental justice, and she's with the organization Zero Hour. Anna Siegel's a seventh grader at the Friends School. She's a member of 350 Maine. She is an organizer of local climate rallies, including a protest at the State House in Augusta tomorrow. And on your right is also a student at the College of Atlantic. She has been very involved with climate action and traveled to Poland for the UN Climate Summit. She's with the group Maine Youth for Climate Justice. Today's show was part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics related to climate change. John Keimel ran the board today. Isaac Merson took your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.